This talk is about distributed storage systems and how these nowadays distributed storage systems are embracing erasure codes in order to tolerate these failures in a less expensive way, and how novel erasure codes like regenerating codes can help on improving the performance of repairs, and what's the cost of doing that. So I'm going to start by showing a simple picture of what we consider by distributed storage system and how it differs from traditional RAID scenarios. So here, the orange boxes represent nodes on our distributed storage systems. And we want to store these four different objects into these nodes. So what we're going to do is encode it with a 64 erasure code, so each object gets encoded into 6 pieces, and we can tolerate the failure of any 2 of these pieces. So the mapping to these pieces, so we have 1 blue object, so we're going to have 6 blue pieces. And the mapping between objects and pieces to the nodes is random and can create some uniform, non-even distribution of pieces to nodes. So, of course, we care about being able to decode the data that we store by reading any 4 out of the 6 in this toy example. But what's the focus of this presentation is basically what's the performance that we get when we want to repair the failure of one of these drives. So in this case, we have the failure of one drive that contains 3 pieces, a blue, orange, and gray. So in order to repair the blue one, we're going to read blue pieces from all over the system in order to generate the missing blue piece. And we're going to do the same for the orange one, reading orange pieces and regenerate the orange one. And for the gray, we're going to read gray pieces and regenerate the gray ones. So this happened all within the system, and we didn't add an extra node. So the repair happens within the nodes that are still alive in the system. Now, the time it takes to perform this operation can be optimized, and it's way faster than with RAID systems, because the repair is fully parallel, and we can exploit the rest of all the surviving nodes, and all of them contribute on the repair. So this can be done very fast. In ideal conditions, the repair time will depend basically on the amount of that data that we need to read per object, so the ratio between the chunk size and how much data we need to read to repair it. Also, the volume of data that we need to transfer from the helper nodes to the one that performs the repair. And finally, the computation that we need to do, the erasure code needs to decode the data, and how much CPU memory resources we have. So at some point, we're going to have a bottleneck in one of these areas. So regenerating codes are a novel erasure code technique that allow us to repair data by reading less data from the surviving disk. So we can go from half of the data that you read on traditional RAID Salomon codes, or even lower ratios. So the problem is regenerating codes come in different flavors. And what I'm showing here is basically the theoretical trade-off curve that we get from these codes. So on the y-axis, we have the storage overhead of the code, or the inverse of the RAID. And on the x-axis, we have the repair traffic, or how much data we need to read in order to repair one missing chunk. So what we are interested is on this point, which is the minimum storage regenerating code. And at this point, we minimize the storage overhead while still providing significant savings on repair traffic compared to traditional MDS codes like RAID Salomon codes. So in this case, for a code that is 15 and can tolerate any 5 erasures, we can reduce around more than 70% the repair traffic. So that's a good advantage of these MSR codes. Problem with these MSR codes is that in order to attain this optimal point down there, we either have to use exponentially grow finite fields, and that comes with computational cost, which is probably not desirable, or we can construct these codes by having the number of chunks that we split the original object grows exponentially as well. So we either choose one of these two drawbacks. We're going to focus in this talk in analyzing what happens when we have MSR codes that basically take this approach, where the number of chunks that we divide our initial object grows exponentially as the size of our code word grows. So the butterfly code that we chose is the erasure code that we chose is one called butterfly code. And I'm just going to show with a small example here how it works. So imagine a data object that we split in four chunks. And these four chunks, I'm going to name them A0, A1, B0, B1. So what we're going to do is on the first node is going to store the A0 and A1. Node 2 is going to store A0 and A1. Node 1 is going to store B0 and B1. And then we're going to have two parity nodes. The first one is going to store the horizontal parity of the two data nodes, and the second parity node is going to store kind of cross parities, very similar to what row diagonal parities does on RAID 6. So by reading any two out of the four, we are able to repair the original object. I'm showing here what happens if we lose the two data nodes and we only have the two parities. So you can get A1 by reading two of the, XORing together two of the parity chunks, and then once we get A1, we just unfold and we are able to decode all the other ones. And in the case of losing one of the data nodes, what this type of construction gives us is that we can repair the missing column by reading less than the size of the object. So in this case, if we lose, for example, B0 and B1, the first column, we can repair by XORing A0 with B0, E0, and so on. And we could do the same for all data columns. So to repair a node 2, we can do a similar thing. And we read by reading three chunks instead of four, we can repair. The benefits that we get from this type of rangetting code construction are more beneficial as the number of data nodes grow. So I'm going to show how this growing works. So this is the small example that I just show you. I just got rid of the XOR sign, so the boxes that are close together are pieces that are being XORed together. So this is basically for two data nodes. If we want to go to three data nodes, what we're going to do is flip this thing symmetrically and go from two rows to four rows. So basically, we flip it symmetrically. And then what we're going to do is the first part of the horizontal parity, we're going to XOR it on the second part of the butterfly parity. And then after that, what we're going to do is add a third column. And this third column, we're going to XOR it on the horizontal parity. And then we're going to XOR it, but from bottom up on the butterfly parity. And now we went from two columns to three columns. And we can keep doing the same. If we want four columns, we just symmetrically double the size of our rows. And then we take the first part of the horizontal, we put it on the butterfly part, and then we add the extra column. The problem with that is that as the number of nodes, data nodes grows, the number of columns grows exponentially, and that's a problem to integrate in existing systems. The other problem is that when we want to repair, in this example, column B, to repair column B, we have to read all the gray chunks. And the problem with that is that results in non-sequential access to the surviving data, and this is also inefficient from existing hard disk drives. So what we are interested in is, given this type of regenerating codes that scale but growing exponentially in the number of rows, how do they perform in real systems? So we implemented and evaluate these codes in HDFS and in Ceph, and basically we're going to tell you what were our experience on doing that. So HDFS and Ceph are very different in how they're currently implement erasure code. And for example, in the case of Ceph, we have that they work by, they take an extreming approach. So you can consider the light blue square to be your data object. So what you're going to do is take the first part of your data object, by default is 4 megabytes. And we're going to split these 4 megabytes in four chunks. This is a 6 code where we can survive any two erasures. So we're going to split it in four chunks. And then each of these four chunks, we're going to split it into 8 additional chunks because it's the size of the number of columns that we have for this code construction. And after we encoded the first 4 megabytes, we're going to proceed to the second 4 megabytes and so on. So that allows us to do encoding and decoding in a streamlined manner. The contrary, in HDFS, it works by batch encoding. So initially, when you introduce the data to the system, you're going to replicate it. And later on, you're going to get rid of the replicas by encoding offline and then just removing the extra replicas that you don't need. When you do that, you can afford having big chunks. So what HDFS does is use 64 megabyte blocks. It takes a bunch of them, 10 or 14, the ones you decide. And then out of these, you generate 2 parity blocks. So you can do it in bigger chunks. So it's a very different approach. So two very different ways of doing encoding. Also, these two different systems, they come with very different ways of dealing with communication, CPU, and we're going to show some of the problems that we experience. So in the case of HDFS, the problem is we encounter a problem on the way the communication is done. And this is basically because HDFS was designed as a stream communication approach, where the reducers basically get data and try to process it all in a streamlined manner. So it doesn't allow us to go and remotely ask for a different set of offsets. We have to do it manually, and then it incurs in a lot of overhead. So what we did is implement our own optimized remote gather. This is something that in Ceph it was not necessary, because Ceph already provides the ability to request remote offsets and do the non-sequential access natively. The other problem with HDFS is that it has very efficient memory management. So when you have to deal with large buffers that you do encoding, basically, by default, it's just 64 megabytes. You don't need to do it, the full 64 megabytes, but you want to do large enough chunks. So when you do that, the memory management is inefficient. So we implemented a new memory pool mechanism that allows us to share memory between encoders, and even across different objects. In the case of Ceph, the different problems that we encounter is that Ceph comes with a really nice plugin API that allows you to implement any erasure code that you want and bring it to the system quite seamlessly. Problem is that this plugin infrastructure doesn't allow to request remote offsets. So the Ceph underlying system lets you do that, but not the plugin system. So we had to extend the plugin system to basically be able to have these remote offsets, so the remote gathering. This plugin that we wrote is actually backwards compatible with the existing plugins. And also, what I already mentioned, in Ceph, the streaming process works by default by taking chunks of 4 megabytes. So when we have large code words, since we grow, the number of our rows grows exponentially, if you split 4 megabytes into an exponentially large number of chunks, then you have really small units of data that you need to process, so it's very inefficient to write, read, and all these things. So what we did just to check what would happen with larger stripes is to go from 4 to something similar, like 64 megabyte stripes. And we're going to show also the data for that. The system where we evaluated and where we implemented and evaluated this thing is a setup of 12 Dell R720 servers. So these Dell servers have 8 HDD slots. So one of them is dedicated for the OS, so we don't write anything in there. And the other 7 are populated with 4 terabyte HDDs. So that gives us a total of 338 terabytes capacity. And we evaluate the failure of one HDD. So the moment that one HDD fails, we populated the system such that the amount of data that we need to repair is 150 gigabytes. So we're going to turn off one HDD, and we're going to let the system rebuild whatever it's left. The total amount of data that needs to be rebuilt is 150 gigs. And we do that over InfiniBand network, where we run everything on IP over InfiniBand, 56 gigabytes per second. And finally, we evaluate 2 different codes. On the First, we evaluate a traditional Reed Solomon code. So these codes are already there on both HDFS and Ceph. They come already with Reed Solomon codes. So we use two different configurations, K5 and K7, with both of them allowing for two parities to fail. So the K5 means that we have 7 nodes where we can tolerate any two, and the K7 means we have 9 nodes where we can tolerate the failure of any two. And similar, we do the same for Butterfly. And Butterfly is basically our implementation in both cases, in HDFS and in Ceph. So the first set of results that I'm going to show here today is the repair throughput. So basically, here we are depicting the repair throughput, how the repair throughput fluctuates over time. And you can see how when the line finishes, it basically means that the repair finished, right? So if you compare Butterfly with Reed Solomon for K5, which is the first figure, the blue line and the red line, you can see how the repair time is around 40% shorter. And here I want to stress that for the type of construction that we have, we would expect the repair time to be half the time, because the amount of data that we need to read is approximately half of that needs to be read from Reed Solomon codes. So there is something that we are not quite getting there. In the case of Ceph, the benefits on repair time are even less evident. And just to highlight here is that for Ceph with 4 megabytes, I'm gonna show later on what's going on, but the repair throughput is very, very poor, and that's just a problem with the fractioning of these code words into exponentially large chunks. What I'm showing here is the CPU utilization during the repair process. So what we can see is that for HDFS, Butterfly codes require a higher CPU utilization. And the case of Ceph for 4 megabytes, we have this crazy utilization that goes up and down. That basically is an artifact of the inefficiencies of dealing with these small chunks, with large number of small chunks. But when we move to something more reasonable, where our stripe is 64 megabytes, we see that the CPU utilization drops significantly. Again, I want to stress that this 64 megabytes is something that may not be the optimal for a real practical system, but it's something that shows us here that is not any problem inherent with Ceph. And finally here, I'm showing the amount of, well, these go in the independent figures. So the first one is the amount of network traffic in gigabytes that we transfer during the repair process. So we can see how for Butterfly, we do achieve the half the repair traffic. So even though we are repairing, transferring half of the data, we still don't get to half of the times. The second figure basically is the amount of data that we need to read to disks, read from disk. And again here we see around half of the data that we are reading. And the last one is the amount of data that we need to write to disks. And in this case, we are far from the optimal. So the optimal is the green column. And we are far from the optimal because in the case of HDFS, data is first written to a temporary local buffer before doing the encoder. That's an artifact of using the existing mapper infrastructure. And in the case of Ceph, we have that all writes first are written to the journal and later on this stage to the drive. So each data is written actually twice. So that's why we compare actually with the brown bar, which is optimal times two, because we are in both cases we are writing twice the amount of data. So basically, to conclude, so we show that by carefully implementing regenerating codes and especially MSR, we can achieve the theoretical optimal traffic and optimal number of reads, but still the repair time is not there. So there are a lot of things that need to be taken into account. And that's an opportunity for distributed storage systems to look at what's going on and what can be done to optimize for this type of systems. And the other is that streaming encoding creates a lot of data fragmentation that leads to extra communication and storage overhead. So that might not also be a good strategy to follow on newer systems that need to be developed. And finally, remote gather operations are required in both systems, and most of the cases, this is not there in existing systems. So thank you very much. I just want to take the opportunity to say that we are looking for summer interns. If someone is interested, I have a link and a contact email for just in case someone is interested. So thank you very much.
The results you showed now was for single failures, probably. Did you see the double failures, what happened?
Okay. This is just for one, the failure of one single HDD. And we are, these regenerating codes, this theoretical minimum bandwidth is only, you can only obtain it for single HDD failures. So when you have two HDD failures, then you you have to do the regular decoding that you would be doing on Reed Solomon. So you don't have the benefits. So
it would be. Don't you have an additional overhead over Reed Solomon for the double failure? I mean CPU and other.
So for the double failure, Reed Solomon would have exactly the same performance. In the case of Butterfly, probably it would have a worse performance because of the fragmentation. Yes.
Ethan Miller, UC Santa Cruz. So the quick question is, what's the difference in computation and other things for actual data writes? And obviously, you've got a systematic code, so reads are no problem. But in terms of writing the parity, how does the computation for Butterfly codes compare to the computation for Reed Solomon, which is an XOR, and typically about three vector instructions do multiply by two?
So it's more efficient, right? The advantage on Butterfly is that all the operations are XOR-based. So we are not working on large finite fields that you need for the second parity on Reed Solomon or even the other parities.
You don't need a large finite field. I mean, for k equals 7, finite field 2 to the 8th is plenty big.
No. You still need to do Galois field operations.
Yes. Three instructions do a multiply by 2. I've written it.
Okay. And in our cases, the encoding throughput is significant or better for Butterfly. And for the repair throughput, there is very little, the CPU has very little impact on all these things. Basically, the bottleneck is all the time on disks.